Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Hello, City FN. As their seven ugly sisters stumble around at the ball, the purple Cinderella waltzes away with 3 points. But can Italiano's men humble Prince Vlahovic with a shock top four spot? We'll discuss that, Juve's missed opportunity in the Champions League, and a whole lot more in this episode of Scudetto. Hello and welcome to Scudetto. What a crazy week of football that was. The top guns falling over each other to throw points away. But anyway, I'm glad you can all be here with us to digest it. And joining us also from Tel Aviv is Boaz. So, Mr. Sacchetti, tell us, how was your week?
I've had a pretty good week. I signed up for the Tel Aviv half marathon. That is a marathon divided by two this week on a whim. And it's in 2 days' time. And I've just checked the weather and there's a almighty storm coming in. So maybe I should have checked that before I signed up.
Good luck. Good luck, Boaz. The Scudetto fan base is behind you.
If anyone wants to sponsor me, no, I'm just kidding.
So have you done absolutely no training for this?
I mean, I've been running regularly, but considering I was planning to run the full marathon, I'm really not there. So it's going to be interesting.
Okay. And as part of your training, presumably you've got beer this evening.
Of course, it's crucial. It's carbs.
What have you got?
I'm going back to the start. I'm having a BrewDog Punk IPA today.
Is this the first of many song puns that you're going to give us?
I hope so.
Great. Okay. Well, I've got a Beavertown Neck Oil Session IPA, which is pretty great. I've had a pretty decent week myself. Nothing hugely exciting to report. Obviously. A lot going on in Italian football.
So a lot going on globally as well, but maybe not for this pod.
Yeah, perhaps for our political podcast.
Yeah,
that one was. But right, let's start with the Villarreal Juventus game last night, as we're recording on Wednesday. Finished 1-1. I think let's start on a nice positive note, because Vlahovic, obviously, with that goal. Pretty much as soon as the game kicked off, I think it was 33 seconds in by UEFA's official timing, the fastest goal by a full debutant in Champions League history, if you're one for your stats, Boaz. What a start he's had at Juve.
Yeah, it's almost like he's a predestinato. He was born to do this. I was really impressed with the fact that for his goal, for a start, it was with his weaker foot, but also the speed in which he decides to take that shot took everyone by surprise. But I think the minute he scored is less important to me, and whether he's the fastest debutant, although some people kind of enjoy these stats. But overall, a great debut performance for him, even though I think he only had about 24 touches in the whole game, one of which was a goal, and one created a very strong chance. So, I mean, in a week where other strikers are being criticized for very few touches, 24 is not the greatest amount of touches, but Vlahovic showed that with such few touches, you can be instrumental.
Yeah, I wonder what other striker you could be speaking about, Boaz. Perhaps one for your Premier League podcast, that one. But let's stick with Vlahovic, because, I mean, he said after the game, which I guess is kind of just reinforces what you said, you were talking about there, that he wasn't that happy with the fact that he had scored a goal, because Juve went into that game wanting to win it. In his words, the mister wanted to win it, the team wanted to win it, I wanted to win it. And I mean, that contrasting with Allegri's, what I thought was kind of a strange post-match press conference, because he said we were too pretty, and you know, I'd like us to be nastier, which I mean, I kind of take exception to. I mean, I feel like maybe Juventus, you know, had this game in the palm of their hands and didn't capitalize. They weren't pretty or adventurous enough, if you ask me. Boaz, was this a wasted opportunity, wasn't it?
Yeah, I think a team like Juventus should really be beating Villarreal home or away, and with all due respect. And I think the way the match set up, you really thought that Juventus could hit the Yellow Submarine on the break and maybe get another goal. Instead, as the minutes passed, it felt like they were dropping further and deeper. And this seems to be part of Allegri's master plan. And it goes back to what you just said. It's not particularly pretty. So I don't know what his reference was to. And also, it doesn't seem to be effective so far this season. So I think particularly with a player like Vlahovic, who we just praised, you'd think that Juventus could maybe be a little bit more forward-thinking.
Yeah. I mean, talking about things that aren't particularly pretty, we should probably speak about that Rabiot tackle. I think pretty much universally agreed that he was very, very lucky not to be sent off for what looked like it could have been a leg breaker, really. I mean, what was he doing?
I mean, there's a bigger discussion to be had about Rabiot here, because Rabiot has now played 112 games for Juventus, and he was a regular starter for Sarri, for Pirlo, and now under Allegri, and he also plays for France under Deschamps. So probably or possibly there's something that we're not seeing that he gives to the team. But from when I watch a 90-minute game with Juventus, it always looks like he's one cock up away from doing something bad. Before we get onto that foul of it was horrible. I have to say that he did take a lot of the blame for the goal Juventus eventually conceded. But I think maybe he wasn't the only player to blame in that situation. But we'll get on to that. But yeah, that tackle was pretty criminal. And I mean, I'm not sure why VAR didn't intervene in this particular case. And it felt like it was ripe for VAR. And the Villarreal players were rightfully aggrieved.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, thankfully, it wasn't as bad. The outcome wasn't as bad as it could have been. One player who did obviously come off with a bad injury from that game was McKennie, who's I think he's really been coming into his own. But he had a scan. He came off injured and had a scan very, very quickly, it has to be said, after the game, that revealed two metatarsal fractures, and that he's expected to be out for 2 months, I believe, is the time frame. It's a bit of a blow to Juve, this, isn't it? I mean, we've just spoken about what Rabiot gives. I mean, losing McKennie has to be a blow.
I think McKennie really shone when he came to Serie A at the beginning of last season, and then maybe he slightly faded away in amongst the general boredom that was Juventus. And
I'd agree with that.
And this season, I don't think he's particularly shown at any point. In fact, I think the most times we've mentioned him was when he got up to some extracurricular activities.
Yeah.
But when you look at the Juventus squad, he probably gives the midfield something that none of the other players do give.
Yeah.
And that's some dynamism, something that's slightly unexpected, both positive and negative. And it'll be a big miss at the moment when they have a few other players out with injuries. The only slight positive that I might take from this is that maybe Allegri will be tempted to play Locatelli a little bit further forward instead of in the mezzala position where he's playing now, which, he is very effective, but it does keep him further away from the action.
Mm. Right. I mean, we should move on from Juve shortly, but before we do that, I think we should probably speak briefly about the Derby della Molle, Juve and Torino drawing 1-1. Any key takeaways from that?
So, I mean, of course, this is a part of our bigger chat about Juventus, but we really have to praise Juric and Torino for the way they handled themselves in this game, and probably the way they handled themselves so far in the season. They really were a thorn in the side of Juventus, and the result is more than justified, I felt. So, I mean, from a Juventus point of view, it was disappointing, especially because they're kind of chasing the Champions League spot, and at the time they were was a possibility to climb, but we'll get onto that. Also, Juventus really didn't show much purpose in that game, which is funny because, again, it goes back to what you said. Allegri was claiming that Juventus should be uglier, but I don't think they can get much uglier than that. And I have to praise Torino defender Bremer, who I think we mentioned him in the past, but he's having a stellar season. I wouldn't be surprised to see him move to a bigger club at the end of the season. And there was a joke going around the internet saying that when Bremer gets back home from training, he puts his house keys, his wallet, and Vlahovic on the side of his bedside table.
So. Very good. Very good. Right. Well, as we wait for Bremer to potentially move on, why don't we move on away from Juventus and talk about the roller coaster that is Roma under Mourinho. So another game in which they had to come back from behind to claim a point. This time, two down they were against Verona. Managed to come back after being down by those two goals at halftime by relying on some of the lads from the Primavera to help them clinch a draw. I think the story that everyone's talking about after this game is Jose Mourinho, though, and his sending off for the kind of Calciopoli-inspired gesture towards the referee, and then refusing to show up for the presser. Boaz, I mean, what's your take on this? Is this box office, or is this, you know, just a bit of a pain in the arse, really?
So, I mean, first of all, this is Roma's third draw in a row, and you consider that if they'd managed to make the 3 points out of at least one of these games, they could also be pushing into that Champions League reckoning. So it's like it's another opportunity missed, in my opinion, by Roma. And in this game in particular, I mean, Mourinho can pump his chest out as much as he likes and act all pompous about the fact that they managed to equalize so late in the game. But realistically, as you just mentioned, they needed two players from the Primavera who are actually managed by De Rossi. So, you know, it's hard to give Mourinho much credit considering how Roma actually performed. With regards to his gesticulating off the field, I thought that... it was in poor style, and the fact that he only got a two-match ban for it is a little bit laughable. But this is Mourinho. Right. This is what Roma have bought into, and by all accounts, the fans are completely behind him. They've lapped up his show, so if they're happy, who am I to complain? And the only thing that I might add is that Mourinho is getting a bit carried away if he thinks that the powers that be are in any ways worried about his Roma side.
Yeah, and obviously it wasn't just Mourinho, because there's all sorts of people were involved in this in the fracas, as it were, with bans being handed out left, right, and center, and additional repercussions for Zaniolo as well.
So yeah, this was you may remember in a few games ago there was a Roma Genoa 0-0, and Zaniolo got a goal in the 90th minute, which was then cancelled by VAR due to a foul in the build-up. And eventually, Zaniolo was also sent off for his protest against the referee. The repercussions from this are that Roma, who earlier in the season were praised for hiring a ref consultant, they hired a former referee to be their official consultant so he could explain to the players how to... not to foul, or I'm not exactly sure. I guess they'll explain the rules to the players better. Or who better than Roma needs this explanation? But in any case, the gentleman in charge of making sure that the Roma lads know how to be better with the referees apparently entered the referee's room for it after this game, and he's not signed up to in the FIGC in any way. So now Roma are up for an even. He's up for a big ban. There's a lot of fines going around. It's just not really spectacular.
Yeah.
And maybe we should give a little mention to the fact that the Friedkins have been very quiet throughout this whole process. And while at the beginning of the season, or at the beginning of last season, we kind of praised them for their the fact that they were detached from the club, the fact that they let the people at the club run the club. It's times like these when you maybe think that a statement from the owners might kind of give some sort of focus to the whole ambiente.
Yeah, I just kind of feel like I can't really help them, to be honest, with all of this kind of circus going on off the field. I mean, it's kind of worked for Mourinho in the past, you know, the us against them mentality, so much so that it's kind of become a bit of a cliche in itself. But I mean, with the results that Roma are producing, they can just do without this, all of this kind of focus on non-football related goings on, to be honest.
And you
use a bit of a shambles.
You use the word circus. I don't think there is a better description of what's going on at Roma right now.
Yeah, right. I mean, talking about circuses, the results at the weekend just across the board in the top eight were pretty unbelievable. To be honest, I think there was only one team, Fiorentina, the only team in the top eight to actually register a win.
It was like that scene from there was an old silent movie where a bunch of people all come up to a door and one guy is like, no, you go ahead. No, you go ahead. No, you go ahead. No, you can.
Yeah.
It was that.
Yeah, it was. I mean, what turned out to be, what looked like it was going to be Milan throwing away their kind of position at the top, they ended up actually a point further ahead at the end of the weekend, bizarrely. But there you go. I mean, Inter losing to Sassuolo, Milan drawing to bottom club Salernitana, Napoli snatching a point at the end against Cagliari. We've mentioned Juve Torino, but then also Fiorentina beating Atalanta for the third time this season. So, I mean, where to begin, really? I guess we start with Inter Sassuolo. Sassuolo, who have been really, really hot and cold. Not that long ago, they were losing 4-2 to Verona and 4-0 to Sampdoria. And then in recent weeks, they seem to have just turned it around, really. I mean, unlucky to lose to Juve in the cup. And then with 10 men, narrowly missing out on beating Roma and then beating Inter 2-0. I mean, the Inter game was one of the games that I watched this weekend, actually. And as good as Sassuolo were, and they were, I think it has to be said, really, really great, like absolutely clinical, well-organized, and not in a kind of negative defensive way, just really, really on it. As good as they were, Inter really weren't at the races. I mean, what's going on? That's like 1 point from the last three league games. And of course, also in amongst the mix, that pretty deflating defeat to Liverpool at San Siro.
I feel that this particular defeat was probably tainted by the Liverpool result in particular. I think that maybe there was some sort of a psychological hangover from the midweek game. And once again, they lost 2-0 at home. In this game, their collapse was a little bit more visible. And Brozovic not being on the pitch, as well as Bastoni being banned, probably had a bigger weight than we thought would. Essentially, Brozovic feels like a player that is essential to any plan Inzaghi puts on, and credit has to go to Conte for the way Brozovic has come along as well. But in any case, I think another big issue for Inter right now is that Lautaro is just not clicking. He's had more or less the same amount of shots on target, chances that he had at this time last year, but he scored way fewer goals. And with Romelu Lukaku moving to Chelsea, we really expected Lautaro to take the Inter defense on his back, the Inter attack onto his back. And let's face it, he has not done that.
Yeah. I mean, also, I think worth mentioning the sort of defensive solidity that Inter have had. I think there was some stat I'd read earlier on today where Inter had gone six games without conceding a goal before Christmas. And now in the 10 games since the turn of the year, they've conceded in eight of those. So Gazzetta even mentioning De Vrij possibly being shipped on at the end of the season with reinforcements coming in. I do think we have to give plaudits to Sassuolo. I mean, I mentioned it briefly there, but they started absolutely on fire with that early goal. And you have to say, even though Inter improved after the break, I think Sassuolo probably deserved the two-goal cushion, not just the 3 points, but the two-goal cushion at the end.
This is also a season where Sassuolo have gone away and won at Milan. They've won at Inter now, and they also won at Juventus. So although their results are all over the place, you can't discount them in one of these games. And I think part of that is the fact that they kind of enter the pitch with they don't seem to have much worries on their shoulders at all. Their gameplay is very fluid and they're fun to watch.
Yeah. Yeah, you're actually preempting an honorable there for later on. I was going to give Sassuolo. But yeah, the first team to beat Inter Milan and Juve away from home in the same season since 1956. So let's just get that honorable mention out of the way nice and early. right, so I mean, next up for Sassuolo, it's Fiorentina, who are also absolutely on fire at the moment. They beat Atalanta 1-0 in the early kickoff on Sunday. I mean, this was a rather bad-tempered affair. I actually felt Fiorentina are quite lucky to come away with the 3 points on this occasion. I had no complaints in the cup. But, I mean, Atalanta having a goal contentiously ruled out for offside. Atalanta probably just about shaded it in terms of, who played better on the day. But then obviously, just to add to sort of that bad temper, Gasperini getting himself sent off again, which incidentally, I don't mean to go on a monologue here, but incidentally, another great stat in the Gazzetta that for the third time in a row now, Gasperini will have to watch Atalanta's game against Sampdoria, which will happen on Monday. It'll be the third time that he watches an Atalanta-Sampdoria game from the stands due to suspension.
Maybe he has an issue with Sampdoria.
Yeah, it's almost like he's doing it on purpose. So he missed the games in February 2021 and October 2021 as well.
Are these home games or away games?
So, well, obviously the one earlier this season would have been at home.
Okay, I thought maybe he had an issue with Liguria in general.
Yeah, maybe it's too heartbreaking for him to go back to the Luigi Ferraris, who knows. But Boaz, let's have some words of praise for Fiorentina. In terms of points obtained, you know, at this stage of a season versus the same time last season, I believe they're the most improved club in Serie A. They had a bit of a rollercoaster spell in January, but between the Coppa and Serie A, that's 3 wins in a row. They're 5 points behind fourth place Juve with a game in hand as well. Could they possibly make the Champions League?
Never say never, although it's obviously quite a tough ask with so many other clubs in the running for it. But linking it to our Vlahovic talk earlier, you have to feel for Vlahovic a little bit because he's moved from Italiano's amazing football to what Allegri deems some sort of football, and it must be depressing. And as you can see, Italiano is already getting a song from Piatek. So obviously, yeah. His attacking football is already imprinted on the new players. And I think while losing a player of that immense quality is a big blow, Fiorentina moved well in the winter transfer window, and I think the players they brought in will be very functional to the game. So can they do it? Yes. Will they do it? Unlikely, but I've stranger things have happened, and I personally have very fond memories of Gabriel Batistuta scoring at the Emirates. So I'd love to see Fiorentina in the Champions League again.
Yeah, and what a story it would be if Vlahovic moved to Juventus and then Fiorentina pipped Juventus to the Champions League spot.
Narrative. You've jinxed it now.
The Scudetto curse will strike.
Sorry, guys. Sorry, Fiorentina.
If there is one guarantee. Right. So that's, I think, one of the kind of big games next weekend or the ones worth tuning in for anyway, Sassuolo Fiorentina on Saturday evening. The other box office game is Lazio Napoli on Sunday evening. Obviously with Sarri taking on his old side. So, I mean, both of these teams have big games on Thursday night, which will probably be the day that most of our listeners actually hear this episode. Napoli have the big game against Barca. I mean, that was a great showing in the first leg of that Europa League game, Boaz, wasn't it?
Yeah, Napoli were highly impressive, particularly defensively, and I thought the penalty they eventually conceded was very harsh, although by the rules it is a penalty, but it felt like maybe Napoli deserved a little bit more from that game. Although you have to say that the ricochet of that game was that they were terrible against Cagliari and very lucky to even get a point, as Spalletti admitted himself.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that was another one of the games that I watched. I mean, I think that they did have all sorts of injury problems kind of coming into this game. But you have to say that Cagliari were by far the better team. As you mentioned, Spalletti obviously conceding that. Lazio, meanwhile, another of the top eight sides to drop points last weekend with a draw in Udine. But setting that aside and the Coppa Italia collapse to Milan, they've quietly put a decent run of form together. They'll be trying to overturn that 2-1 deficit against Porto on Thursday. But in terms of the game at the weekend, Boaz, who do you fancy for this?
I have to say that this is maybe where Napoli will begin to stumble. I said earlier in the season that I'm not sure Napoli have the quality to have to put through a full Scudetto race, although I'll be happy to be surprised. But Sarri's teams, they're as we said, they've been very hot and cold so far, but when things click, they really do click. And at the moment, it feels like even the Udinese game, they were overall quite positive, and I wouldn't discount them, let's put it this way.
Yeah, right. And in the interests of doing a roundup of the eight sisters, as people were predicting at the start of this season, which it kind of has turned out to be. Boaz, what do you have to say about Milan just about scraping a point against bottom side Salernitana?
I think the caveats to this result were that Salernitana have appointed a new manager, and he's kind of a specialist in relegation battles, and so it's not a surprise that suddenly Salernitana were a little bit more solid, and also they've signed a few players in January. That being said, their last results have been draws against the likes of Cagliari and Spezia, who are relegation threatened, and this is, I think, the first time in about 9 years that the team who are top of the league do not beat the team who are bottom of the league at this stage of the season.
Yeah.
Overall, I think it's mostly a missed chance by Milan. There was a few individual mistakes that led to the goals, so you can't really blame a tactical approach, but Milan is starting to show an issue with beating small sides. I was looking at the results this season, and there's a few stumbles here and there, and you think that if Milan could have got even a draw out of a few of these games, they'd be putting a lot more pressure on Inter, who, unfortunately for me at least, still have a game in hand. So, I think, as I said, I think particularly with the results over the weekend and the fact that Sassuolo were always going to be kind of a banana skin for Inter, I felt that a match against Salernitana was a fine chance to win the game, particularly since they went ahead.
Yeah. Definitely an opportunity missed. Okay, let's move on to best of the rest in that case. We'll start off with Atalanta's owners, the Percassi family, who have sold a 55% stake in the club to a consortium led by Bain Capital managing partner and Boston Celtics co-chairman Steven Pagliuca.
No relation to legendary goalkeeper Pagliuca.
I believe no relation, but I don't know. Maybe our listeners can let us know if we're overlooking a story there. Elsewhere, Samp's third all-time top goal scorer, Francesco Flacchi, returned to the field after a 12-year ban playing for Eccellenza club Signa. Flacchi tested positive for cocaine twice, which obviously led to the ban. Italy women lose to Sweden in the Algarve Cup on penalties following a very positive 1-1 draw. And it's been reported today that the 2022 to 2023 Serie A campaign will begin in August, on August the 13th to 14th that weekend, which is going to be bloody hot if anybody's been in Italy at that time of the year. So, yeah, obviously an early start to the season due to the World Cup in Qatar.
And no rest for the wicked. We just had a Euro and now it's straight into it.
I know. This is the genius of deciding to move the World Cup.
Of course.
We've got a couple more bits to get through here. So Roma's oldest season ticket holder, 99-year-old Eliseo Lorenzetti, has sadly passed away. But some nice touching messages from Roma's social media accounts about that. So nice to see there. And finally, TS forces Lille to pay 20 million to Sporting Club for Leao. Previously, it had been determined that the player would have to pay the cash money, but that has now obviously been ruled to not be the case.
It's kind of a bizarre scenario because if you may remember that back in the day, the fans broke into the Sporting training ground and threatened to beat the players up and did kind of end up hitting some of the players. And a lot of the players kind of rescinded their contracts out of it. But because Leao was considered a promising star, Sporting refused to rescind his contract in particular. And this is where this whole situation stems from. So, I mean, I think this has some sort of repercussions for Milan's mercato as well, because it means that they'll have more money to spend. And also Lille are one of the teams that Milan are linked with a lot of their players. So interesting to see what happens next.
Mm. Yeah, will be. Buzz, perhaps you can tell us about the Italians abroad now in your regular section.
Play that theme. Play that theme.
Theme tune coming up right about now. It's time for Keeping Up with the Italians.
I believe we've never been to Brazil as part of this segment, so here we go. Eder, who you may remember was part of the Euro 2016 Italy side, scored his first goal for Sao Paulo versus Santos. I didn't even know he was still playing, so good on him. Paolo Tramezzani, who manages in Switzerland for FC Sion, has been banned for 4 matches following his red card last Sunday. That's 4 matches banned. That's more than Mourinho for something far less bad. Mm-hmm. We won't get into that. Alessio Lisci continues his great management spell at Levante by beating Atletico Madrid at the Wanda. And following the end of the winter break, De Zerbi's Shakhtar are supposed to kick off on Saturday versus Metalist. But of course, with the ongoing crisis, I'm not sure if that game is going to go ahead.
One for our political podcast.
One for our sister political podcast, yes. Cedric Colombo scored a wonderful overhead kick in his debut for Zarco Salo in the Bulgarian First League. And my man Fabio Borini scored a penalty in the 1-0 victory by Karamagurk versus Sivaspor. Elsewhere, Domenico Coppola, who in the past had appeared for Italy in their youth sides, has moved to Armenia to defend the goal of FC Van. Sicilian striker Andrea Compagno scored for FC Craiova in the Romanian First League. Pasquale Sensibile is the director of sport at Galatasaray. Sounds like a sensible appointment. And lastly, I mean, and I was going to mention Antonio Conte's mad celebrations in the 3-2 victory against Manchester City. But since then, there's been kind of breaking news that just happened a few minutes after we began recording. But in any case, he seems to have given a kind of a sack me or back me speech to the media after unexpected loss to Burnley. So, I'm sorry to say, but Tottenham Hotspur is the gift that keeps on giving.
Yeah, it's a bit like Roma, really, what's going on there at the moment. Right, okay, let's move on to the honourables and dishonourable mentions. Boaz, thank you very much for keeping up with the attendance, by the way. I'm going to start off the honourable and dishonourable mentions by giving a dishonourable. I believe it's our only dishonourable this week. So complete contrast to last week. Yeah, this it's a dishonourable, but again, it's a Morata challenge entry by De Jolla for Cagliari when they were 1-0 up against Napoli. And yeah, I mean, this was 3 potentially crucial points for Napoli, a huge upset it would have been, and ball was floated across to him absolutely perfectly, and keeper at the opposite post, he's on the 6-yard box and has the entire goal to aim at and somehow manages to hit it directly at the goalkeeper. So dishonourable mention, Morata challenge entry. Boaz, you have an honourable mention for, I'm not sure if this is Koulibaly or Spalletti, or if it's a dishonourable for Spalletti for sliding at Totti, perhaps?
Since we're on a general positive vibe today, let's give this honourable to Koulibaly, who had an excellent game against Barcelona in the midweek, having just come back from as the African champion. And as you alluded to there, Spalletti said that Koulibaly was the best player he has ever coached, which is a little bit rich considering he did coach one Francesco Totti, but the two aren't on best of terms, so maybe there was something to that too.
Mm. Right. Okay, and I'm giving my regular goals honourable mention. Tough week to pick this week. There were some great efforts, notably I think Quagliarella, Belotti, Bonazzoli, but I don't know. I think this is your impact on me, Boaz, that there were just so many shoddy goalkeeping mistakes involved in those goals. The winner this week is going to be Eduardo Bove. A nice positive for Roma, obviously, after all the negativity that we've just discussed. But yeah, for his goal and his part in the youngsters' rescue job, just a great effort that kind of took everyone by surprise at the near post. So hints of goalkeeping errors there as well. But I mean, I think of all of the kind of goals this weekend, that was probably the best. And also just nice to see a youngster get on the score sheet. Boaz, an honourable mention for Marco Verratti.
Yeah, Marco Verratti played the full 90 minutes in the Real Madrid versus PSG Champions League tie. And while the headlines obviously went to Mbappé, who got a goal in the 94th minute, or elsewhere maybe went to Messi, who missed a penalty. But Marco Verratti was imperious in midfield. He had a 92% pass precision rate. He won all his duels. Basically, fantastic performance. And I think we've said this in the past as well, but it'll be a great shame once Marco Verratti retires to know that he's never played in the Serie A. But what a player.
Yeah, absolutely. Second that. Right, I'm giving an honourable mention. I'm kind of stealing wading into your terrain here, Buzz. Now, giving an honourable to Milan, who have announced that their fans are able to... Well, let's say initially the reduced prices for the upcoming Serie A game against Udinese, but beyond just having sort of very reasonably priced tickets, which would be great to see in other leagues that shall not be mentioned. They have also announced that fans, I believe it's fans under 30 and over 60, if they want to bring friends with them and sit in certain areas of the stadium, they can bring up to 3 friends along for just €1, which I think is a great initiative. And good to hopefully get San Siro nice and... Well, to 75% capacity, I guess, for that one.
And as you know, I've recently booked a vacation to Italy, and unfortunately there are no home games in the period when I'm there, so I'm a little bit gutted.
Yeah, might have to bring it forward a little bit, Buzz.
I'll explain to my family and my job.
You do that. Yeah, you've got an honourable for Diego Stramaccioni.
Basically, Juventus under-23 player Stramaccioni was footage of him knocking Rabiot to the floor while they were playing the piggy in the middle game was shown on social media. And considering Juventus' injury crisis, it could have been a pretty bad blow. But then again, considering how bad Rabiot has been in recent appearances, maybe Stramaccioni was thinking forward.
Right. Okay. So I mean that kind of feels like it should maybe be a dishonorable, but I'm happy to.
He's acting in the greater interest of the club.
Right, okay. Right, so I mean, next up for me was an honourable mention for Sassuolo for that feat of beating Inter Milan and Juve away from home. So we'll move on to your next honourable mention, which is for Daniele De Rossi.
This is an honourable mention for World Cup winner Daniele De Rossi, who had some great bants with World Cup winner Marco Materazzi. Basically, Marco Materazzi posted a picture of the room where he keeps all the shirts he's collected over his career. And it looks like a cupboard that's essentially packed with shirts. And Daniele De Rossi commented, "That's all very nice, but where do you keep the players' shins that you broke?"
Harsh. But I mean, probably fair. Right. And just to finish up, I mean, we've mentioned the sort of positives and negatives of Antonio Conte over the last few days, really. We mentioned them earlier on in this episode. But I'm still going to give Antonio Conte an honourable mention for the post-match press conference following that dramatic Tottenham win over City, where he said that current Lecce director of football and former Fiorentina director Pantaleo Corvino, who said to him, "You can pick the wrong wife, but you can't get away with picking the wrong striker or goalkeeper." So a not so thinly veiled message to Spurs chairman Daniel Levy, I suspect there.
Yet another not so thinly veiled.
Yeah, before the upfront message to Daniel Levy that came tonight as we record. Right, that's all we have time for this week. But thank you. Well, thank you, Boaz, first of all. But thank you, everybody, for tuning in to listen. As ever, please do subscribe to the podcast on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or whichever platform is your favorite. We will speak to you next week. Until then, enjoy the football. La Roma è campione d'Italia per la stagione 2000-2001. Il titolo del 2008, l'Inter è campione d'Italia, 16° scudetto per la squadra nerazzurra. Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.